You are listening to the Glass Cannon Network, the premier source for role-playing game entertainment. Welcome to Cannon Fodder, a behind-the-scenes look at the Glass Cannon Network.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to Cannon Fodder. It is Wednesday, June 26th, 2024. And I'm your old pal, Joe O'Brien.
And I'm Troy. Clearly, my voice has recovered faster than yours.
Valley.
I truly thought my voice would be okay today. I didn't use it much this morning in order to save it for the FOD. So I never did anything quite at that projection or that volume. And as soon as I did it, I was like, oh, no. It's still gone. It's still gone from the most amazing weekend ever. A weekend of incredible shows in Denver and Nashville and the first ever GCN retreat in Nashville. And holy shit, man. I mean, I don't even know if we have time in this fodder to debrief accurately that weekend. But what a weekend.
We'll try.
We'll try. What were your main takeaways from the first ever GCN retreat?
I mean, it was just wonderful top to bottom. I kind of went in assuming it would be. I don't know. I was just very, very confident that it was going to be wonderful. I was very confident in the amount of preparation that went into it. And I just felt like right from the get-go, I was like, I want to create something that has very small chance of failure. You know what I mean? Like, don't create yes. a bunch of different things where it's like, oh, we didn't print out the blah, 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 or we didn't have the banner hanging. It was like, I want to just create something that focuses on, people, like-minded people getting in a room together and playing games. And then it's like impossible for it to fail. And I mean, it's just exceeded all expectations, and my expectations were already pretty high. It was wonderful. I couldn't stop thinking about it. Even when I got home, I felt like such a weenie. I just kept like checking in the Nash hype channel, the Nashville hype channel on Discord, being like, what are people saying? I miss my new friends.
Exactly. I told you this, I had that leaving the con melancholy, like leaving yeah. Gen Con, like the last day of Gen Con when you see them rolling up the rugs and everything's getting thrown in the trash. It's just like, it's so sad because you had seen so much life and vibrancy, vitality, love of gaming overflowing all before that. And that's what it felt like the day we left the resort to go to do the show. I was just like, oh. Man, I just want to be in there playing more games. It was so much fun. So we ran gauntlets with members of the Nash that played iconic characters. So that in and of itself was a blast.
So fun.
I remember early on in one of my games, I'm running a game. You're behind me at a table running a game. And I just see you go, hey, Joe. And I turn, oh, Brian. And I turn around. And you're like, Lord just missed. Shocker. It was amazing. All the little emergent stories that happened with the iconic characters playing together, all these crossing so many different shows and stuff and different parts in history of the network, you know, Baron side by side with Eris, you know, just like right. You're going cross-eyed. It was really, really fun. But then board gaming as well. You got to board game.
Yeah.
Which was great. You really had a good time playing what? Hero Quest and Cthulhu Death May Die.
Yeah. I played Hero Quest with a great crew. And then we played an extended long session of Cthulhu Death May Die where for the last hour, only one player was still active. The other three characters were dead, but we were all so engaged. We're like, we're going to figure this out together. And it was amazing. Closed that place down at like 1:30 in the morning, Saturday night. Friday night.
Friday night.
Yeah, and then just Saturday, more gauntlets, and then we were like, fuck, I don't want to go do the show. I just want to hang out and game more. But yeah. Then we'd go to the show and have, as you and I have now said several times, the best show in tour history, yeah. Saturday night in Nashville. It was the single greatest thing that's ever come out.
I know. So for those of you that were not there and listen to Strange Aeons, I am so, so incredibly excited for you to get to the Nashville show. I certainly don't mean to overhype it, but I just am excited for you to hear it. It was maybe you had to be there. I don't think so. I think it'll translate, but it was wild. And even just in gaming, the session itself was one of my favorite sessions ever. It just had everything.
It really did.
And so I'm really, really excited for everybody to hear that.
And watch it if you can. That's one.
Oh my God.
It's just a lot of stuff you're going to really want to see.
The visuals are just, But no spoilers. No spoilers here.
Yeah.
But it was a fantastic time. I'm sure you'll hear more and more of it as other episodes of other shows record. Everybody's going to be talking about this. And so we'll get more of other people's reactions as we go. But we have a lot to get to in today's FOD. We got a lot of news coming down the pike.
Yeah.
We're actually on the cusp of a little FOD summer vacay. Troy and I are taking a little vacation. So we're not going to have FOD for 2 weeks. It's going to be 2 weeks, no FOD. But we'll be back on July 17th. And on that day, we're going to have a lot of fun stuff to talk about as well. But what I mean to say is, since we're not going to be on for 2 weeks, there's a lot of news to get to right now to cover the next couple weeks of stuff that's coming down the pike. Of course, we'll talk about episode 40 of the GCP, and then We Are Stupid. And I'm going to give a little extra time to listener mail, since there isn't that much to talk about in the episode this week in terms of analyzation, because it was a great just like kind of role play and move the plot in an interesting direction episode. All right, so let's start with news. Just a couple plugs real quick. Today, Wednesday, June 26th, I'm going to be streaming at 11 a.m. Eastern time on our Twitch channel. If you have not, if you're listening to this in the morning and you can catch it, I'm streaming more Elden Ring. I'm very excited to doing a run to the DLC. Very excited about that. I've got this path in mind that I'm going to be streaming at that time that is going to hopefully be like a way to skip a whole ton of bosses and just get to Moog, where you have to get, but like I'll be way under leveled, so we'll just see if it's like even possible.
Well, I want to ask you about this. So like I kind of want to do it, and my character that I platinumed with, I'm like, well, it would be so easy to just go in there, be over leveled and do it, but I kind of want to start over. But as I started to research it, it was like, if you want to do it and be of a commensurate level for what is supposed to be a very hard DLC, you should really invest 50 to 60 hours of gameplay doing it, like doing X, Y, and Z.
Leveling
like,
yourself up.
I don't know if I have another 50, 60 hours. I never beat Starfield yet. I want to go beat that. So I don't know. I'm so torn. I could also, respect the character and... I don't know. I don't know what to do.
Yeah. So it's in my mind as a potential option if I have to fall back on it to respec the character. But I have a spec in mind I want to go in with. And part of this, I'm going to put at least 20 to 30 hours into it. Part of that is going to be learning how to play the new spec, right? Like if I just it's like, I have a 15th level paladin. And I'm like, all right, well, now I'm going to play a 15th level wizard at the next session. I'm just going to respec. Like, you're going to be abysmal at that thing unless you evolve with it and you know the weapon moves and the weapon sets. And because I'm moving from a caster build to a straight, strong strength and endurance build, heavy armor, heavy poise, large colossal weapons. And I want to play with that, but I've never really done that before. And so I want to learn it as I go. And I'm going to play a lot of it off air so that as soon as possible, I can get to Shatter of the Erdtree on air. Anyway, that's the idea. I'll be streaming that today, Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern. You're streaming tomorrow, Thursday. You're back to Baldur's Gate. That's great.
That's it. This is my last stream. Yeah, I've done everything except the final boss.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's going to be a two-hour stream, if it'll go a little long, or if I'm going to have to you can usually tell pretty early, like, oh, fuck, I got to reload a save. I got a scum save here. So we'll see. It's definitely going to be my last stream one way or another. I'd like to beat the game on stream, but I haven't looked to see, how long the Elder Brain fight is and, all the other shit that goes down, because there's a couple other, quests, personal quests that you can only do at the finale. I think you're given, choices throughout the fight, so... So we'll see. I've done everything that I could possibly want to do in that game. I have only one real open quest, and that's to go defeat.
All right. Well, you heard it here. Do not miss the finale of What's his name?
Stiff Dickerson.
Stiff Dickerson.
Dude, I started this Stiff fucking Dickerson character for Extra Life.
Yeah,
the only
November.
Game I've played since November. I stopped playing. In December I was still playing Call of Duty. A little bit of Starfield, and then I was like, all right, I want to dedicate myself to this in January. I'm done with this game.
Done with
this
game.
It's fantastic. It's one of the best games I've ever played.
Yeah. It's amazing. It is an amazing game.
Time to move on.
What else? All right. So going in chronological order, yes. We're also going to have another Talk Nerdy Town Hall with Jared and myself on Discord for those that want to hang out. And we'll be talking about a nerdy topic, bringing you up on stage to talk with us. It's been a blast. For those at the Vorpal or higher tier on our subscriber service, you can come to the private Discord and hang out with Jared and I. We have a great time. That's going to be Wednesday, July 10th. So Wednesday, July 10th at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific, we're going to be live on Discord, just hanging out with you, bringing you up to the stage, talking about what you guys want to talk about. We'll have some great giveaways as well for that. I'm already stocking them up. Then, in a couple weeks after that, and we'll be back on FOB before we talk about this more, but remember, we're going to Comic-Con again. We're going to San Diego Comic-Con again. That's going to be, oh my God, I don't have the date ready. Friday, July 26th. Yes.
Yep.
Friday night, July 26th, we're doing our show at San Diego Comic-Con playing Marvel, the Marvel Multiverse role-playing game. It's going to be fantastic.
It's me, very Joe, excited to be out Skid, there again. Matthew, and Sydney, the good enoughs. There might be other guests, I don't know, but we'll definitely have me, Joe, Skid, Sydney, and Matthew. I'm very excited about that. It's a Deadpool adventure that will be debuting. It may or may not have a variant cover featuring us. So
fun
that's very
fact,
exciting.
I had never seen Deadpool. Never saw it.
Did you watch
it? For whatever reason. And I watched it on the flight back from Nashville, like for the first time, the first one.
First one, yeah.
And it's probably not going to come as a surprise. It's fantastic.
It's
I was
great.
Like, wow, this is really great. Like, I remember seeing the first 5 minutes at some point late at night, like maybe at somebody's place or something, hanging out. And I was just like, all right, this isn't my vibe. Like, the overly disgusting and overly foul and fourth wall breaking. I was like, it's not really my thing. But once you settle into it, it is a great character and a really good origin story. And so I was just like, I'm so into this. I'm looking forward to watching 2 and then Deadpool Wolverine and then just like – getting in the zone for that show.
You'll really be doing a lot more research than I will. I've never been a big Deadpool guy, and just everybody loves Deadpool.
But
I think everybody loves
does.
Deadpool because he looks like Spider-Man, but he swears and has like guns.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I thought too, and I kind of wrote it off. Mm-hmm. I really like his origin story. It's
a fantastic
origin story. And so it's just really like it's just a take that I never thought of before, you know, on the whole X-Men mutant thing. And it's really, really fun. So I'm very excited to dig into that.
I think we still have Marvel Unlimited. You should read, go back and read some of the comics.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm also going to be doing Faster Purple Worm Saturday
at
Comic-Con. I don't know what the time – I can't remember what the time is. I feel like it's 5 o'clock, but I'm going to be sneaking another show. I might be on a panel Saturday morning too. So listen, if you're coming to Comic-Con, please come see our shows. If you're in L.A., California, Vegas, anywhere in Southern California area, just come and see the fucking shows. It'll be worth it to get a day pass and see these shows. The show that we did at Comic-Con last year – was so good, and it never saw the light of day. I think they're going to try and film it this time around, but you never know. Anything could go wrong. So if you can come out there and see it live, we'd love to have you supporting us. We're going to be at the con this year, prime time. It's fucking Marvel. It's a big deal. So please come out if you can.
Yeah, come out if you can. And all you need is a pass to the con. This isn't like you got to buy tickets to the show. You just got to have a pass to the con, and it's free to come to the show.
Yeah, get a day pass.
Get a day pass. All right. Awesome. And then last thing is, I don't know. You've talked about this. You've teased this a little bit. I'm not sure how much it sunk in with people. When we made the decision to change over what we're doing at the booth this year and that we weren't going to do live broadcasting from the booth, but instead do those gauntlets and play with the niche in the booth, we decided that we wanted to still have content for those that couldn't make it to Indianapolis and those that just want to hang out on the floor and watch it from the booth. Yeah. We're going to be premiering new content every day of the Gen Con weekend on YouTube, and we're crushing through this stuff right now. Like, we're in the midst of recording stuff. You're not going to see it yet. We're grinding away in the background, so things might be like a little quiet, but all of a sudden that weekend at Gen Con, you're going to get new premiere actual play content from Chaosium, from Paizo, from Evil Hat, from Marvel, separate from San Diego Comic Con. All new stuff, Free League and more. Like, we're going to be playing Renegade, or be playing a bunch bunch of different games. Actual plays are going to premiere all weekend long on YouTube. We'll come back with all different specific titles for you and games that we're going to be playing when we hit back the next FOD on July 17th. So tune into that FOD and we'll have more specific info on like what games we're playing and what times they're going to kind of land and stuff.
Yeah, it'll be hopefully 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then that short day on Sunday at least. So it'll be just like the years past, except it won't be happening live. I can't wait. This is some really fun stuff. I'm going to play in something. I've like switched out. I'm going to have you GM something, and I'm going to go so just so I can go play in something, even though I don't play anymore. And yeah, it's it, dude, that whole – I cannot believe that we're already in – like Gen Con mode, because we start Gen Con mode January, but like now we're a month away. It's crazy.
Yeah. Those gauntlets. It's crazy how fast it's going
to
be.
Getting to play those gauntlets this weekend. I cannot wait to run the gauntlets in the booth, and we're going to have the terrain and the 3D minis and everything. And there's only a few slots left. There are, I think there's Jared's got a 11:30 a.m. on Thursday slot. That's the second slot because I open up the booth with my slot. That's sold out. Jaron has the 11:30. There's a couple tickets left to that. And then Matthew Thursday at 12:45, one ticket left. Jared Thursday at 3:30. There's a couple tickets. Jared Thursday at 4:45, one ticket. And then Jared Friday at 12:45. One ticket. So there's really only a couple tickets left for these gauntlets. And if I was going, no offense to anybody else, I would play in a Jaron gauntlet. Because especially hearing the stuff that he pulled at the Nashville retreat.
Screaming constantly, like left and right. There was all he played the One Ring and he did Casa Doom. And like replayed that whole thing. And he had all these point systems for how much noise they're making. And will they raise the Balrog and fighting all the goblins and orcs, whatever.
So awesome.
I mean, they had a blast. And then he ran Call of Cthulhu and basically just did the end of a long-term campaign. It was like, because you only had a two-hour slot. So basically, it began with Cthulhu rising out of the water, and they just had to fight Cthulhu.
That's amazing. I didn't know what happened.
He was just cracking up. He was literally laughing out loud and cackling at Cthulhu's stats. He was like, you should see this. He's telling the players, I wish you could look at this. He's like, I roll to hit. Oh, 87. That's a hit. You know, just like ridiculous stuff. But anyway, they all had they were just raving the next day about it. So yeah, anyway. I would play in a Jaron table as well. All right, let's get into the Glass Cannon podcast here, episode 40. I know it's been a few weeks since you've recorded this, and we have been on the go this whole weekend. So things might be a little bit fuzzy, but what a fantastic episode for me. One of my favorites in terms of turning points, you know, really kind of shifting the focus finally of this adventure away from Kanipo and the Thinlands,
yeah,
and Nighthold, and kind of something that was very, very confusing and very ethereal to something that is much more focused and really kind of a clear understanding, not of what's directly in front of us, but what our ultimate objectives right now are. Very crystal clear, and I love that. So I guess let me start with. We arrive, we meet all these elves, pardon me, and one in particular who stands out as an astronomer, someone who lets us know it's official that we're on Castrovel. So that was a fun moment to be able to reveal that, finally, even though we had suspected it for a while, and then to learn that there might be a way home. And of course, the person that knows how to get us home is infected by the Shade Wither key itself. So just really
immediately
cool scene.
Immediately incapacitated,
epic scene. Can you talk to me about that in terms of, I know you usually don't like to talk about this, but I'm just curious, like, is the book like she grabs the Shade Wither key? Like, it was just kind of strange. Or is this something you came up with to kind of move it along quickly?
In the book, that's kind of where they want to get you to. And Zephyr had offered it pretty early. She was like, look at my key. And what you don't want to do is like have her be incapacitated without like giving the PCs a chance to form a relationship with her, however small, and make it clear that like your only hope of going home is her. And
her
then
knowledge.
When she gets incapacitated, yeah. it's all of a sudden like, well, shit. Because as great as the other ones may be and what they do, she has had a breakthrough recently communicating with someone else from Galarian. How convenient. And so she's been studying that connection. She thinks she may be able to get you back. But if she just gets incapacitated right away, you don't get that moment. So when Zephyr, like very early on, was like, look, I was like, oh, wow, we'll get to that in a second. Let me tell you so many things I'm excited about.
yeah,
but it was cool. It was a really cool moment. That.
Yeah, it was a really, really cool moment. And I really loved – well, let's get to this in a second.
Yeah.
After she goes down and we have the interaction with – oh, I forget the guy's name. He doesn't identify as a man. Yeah, that's right. That was a really interesting conversation because they sort of brought forth the mythos, right? The legends of this curse in a way that's completely different from our understanding of it, though its effects are the same. So that to me was a really cool cultural moment where you see they've identified this thing as something – we don't use the same terminology for it, but it is the same thing in the end. And so that was really neat. And then at that point, you let us level up, which is very, very exciting to finally get to third level. And you want to do it on air. So that was – talk me through the decision to – we have never done this before. Like we've done highlights on air.
Oh, yeah.
But we've never raw found out that we're on air. And then at that moment had to just start – our typical off-air discussion of batting around what we might want to do with our level up.
Yeah, I knew we'd leveled up on the show before, but I wasn't 100% sure. I just feel like I never sprung it on you guys that like, all right, you're leveled up now. I always give you a little warning like, hey, sometime in the next few episodes, there's a good chance you might level up.
So and start just, thinking about it.
Yeah, so start thinking about it because then we can do it. I thought it'd be more fun just to kind of surprise you with it, especially where you have been wanting this level up for so long.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to put you on the spot without like holding you to anything, you know, because I know that there are people who really get a kick out of hearing the level up. So hearing that raw thought process and the collaboration between all of you as you decide like, oh, if you're going to go this way, then I'm going to go that way. I thought it'd be a nice, fun change of pace.
Yeah, I think that it went really well. There were a lot of great comments on YouTube about people really enjoying seeing the nitty gritty of how we kind of talk through all these things. And cool. Professor Eric, I'm glad we did it because Professor Eric had comments on it. And that's really going to be the focus of We Are Stupid this week because we didn't have a combat. We didn't have blow by blow mechanics. But what we did have was our showing everyone else our understanding of how we approach a level up. And so he had some insights into that. So we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, ultimately by the end, well, first of all, it's just hilarious. The whole cliff pooping thing was so amazing. I mean, just an off the cuff comment that ended up being hilarious. Barnes being like, I'll join you. And then, and then Hubert doing it. I mean, it was just hilarious. But outside of all those laughs, what I love that we come away with here is a crystal clear mission that's ahead of us that we haven't really had in a while. Like things got a little bit clearer after we walked through the gate, ended up here and said, well, look, we have to get to that civilization. But we had no idea if it was a civilization. We had no idea if they could get us home or where we were or any of that stuff. Now everything's a little bit more grounded. You have this woman who can help get us home, but she's been incapacitated. We have to get the cure. And in order to do so, we have to travel to the ancient vaults of this elven settlement, community, whatever, and go to their memory cache and try to defeat whatever guardians may be there. Or not defeat necessarily, deal with whatever guardians may be there in order to get the cure. To bring her back, to get ourselves home, to our home planet, because we're not even on our own planet. So huge turn that I did not see coming, and what a cool – I mean, this adventure is nothing like what it started like, right? Like what we're doing right now we're still in book one, and it is nothing.
Thumb on it. Yeah, it just keeps moving, and that's what attracted to me in the first place.
Yeah, it was awesome. So let's talk through a little We Are Stupid.
Okay. We are stupid.
Can't even sing it. Thank you, Nicholas. We Are Stupid is Yeah, not so much corrections as much as clarifications and just kind of talking through things. So, Professor Eric, as a planetary scientist himself in his own way, in terms of one of his majors in college, was a little taken in by our conversation of what lore or what knowledge would we use to recall knowledge about the solar system. This was an interesting conversation that we had during the episode, trying to kind of pinpoint it. And basically, to sum up his thoughts, it just sort of lays out the main thing he wants to point out here is that the absent lores are designed to further specify within the already existing skills and to give you a chance at maybe a lower DC check because your lore is so specific. But there is no such thing, the way he approaches the game, at least, as a lore that you must have in order to know something. Like, everything falls under one of the generic things in one way or another, even if it happens to be a higher DC, it still falls under those things. And so he said if he had to make a spot ruling regarding planetary whatever knowledge, it could come under occultism for what he would call astrology, right? Like obscure philosophies of the cosmos and space. That would be occultism. Or it could be nature, straight up, for physics and astronomy, or society for stories of civilizations of other planets, you know, whatever in the solar system. So you could see it being any one of those three, and it's all about kind of how you set the DCs and stuff like that. But the main takeaway he wanted us to remember is lores are designed to further specify a line of knowledge within a skill, not to be a standalone thing you must have in order to attempt to learn something. Everything fits in one way or another within those skills. It's just about how, as a GM, you interpret it. So that's sort of
Here's a question I want to throw. We were talking about – did we talk about this at lunch? Or maybe it was one of the Lyft rides. I brought it up, and it's like me, you, Jared, and Skid were in the car. And I said – because we were talking about, you know, the stinginess of knowledge checks and with some of the monsters we were running for the gauntlet, we were kibitzing with each other. And I said, like, if you roll a success on a knowledge check – and a creature has 9 immunities and it's just a regular success, do you give them 1 immunity, 2 immunities, all the immunities if that's what they ask for? I'm curious what other GMs do. I'm curious what the you know, the people who play a lot of PFS, how they tend to run it. You know, let's yeah, assume so a monster professor- that has several different bullshits. Like, they got immunities, they got resistance, they've got weakness, they've got some death throws, like cool powers that you'd want to know about. If you're like, immunities, if you're like, well, and you look at all these, they're like, immune to bleed. But there's also 9 other immunities. I'm curious how people
Professor Eric has weighed in on this before and says the top not this specifically, but he's weighed in and said the top thing that people typically ask for is what they call IRW, immunities, resistances, weaknesses. These are like the key things that people want to know in a recall knowledge checkup on a creature during a fight. Mm-hmm. And so let's further specify, Professor Eric, and get us your thoughts on this. Does that mean you can ask for just the immunities, just the resistances, or just the weaknesses as part of a successful check? Or is it like you ask, what are its immunities, resistances, weaknesses? And then you can kind of pick one. If they just pick immunities, do you give them, oh, they're immune to death effects, they have poison, bleed, whatever? Or do you pick one? What I said in the car is I give them 1, potentially 2, depending on how high the roll is, that I think are directly related to their PC's abilities that they would normally use in combat. So, like, that is what I do. I can give them the most valuable of those immunities and weaknesses and resistances.
Sometimes it's hard for you to know, though.
But like, not
you
don't all know, of them. No.
You don't know the PC's skills well enough. Like, I don't know what Aldo's got up his sleeve during the live show. And if you guys face a skeleton that's immune to bleed, death effects, disease, mental, paralyzed, poison, and unconscious, I can't just think, like, what are the 2 things that would be most relevant here? Sometimes I can. But I'm curious, like, if what's the – I don't think as written.
What's the standard
clear.
In, especially in like a PFS? Yeah, I'd be curious to know, like, what's kind of the standard?
Because if it's you get all the immunities, if that's like the standard, that would be the one that I would rock. I would just be like, tell me immunities. Because it's rare that they're resistant to 10 different things or weak to 10 different things. But oftentimes certain, you know, creatures have tons of immunities, and knowing that is clutch.
Yeah. All right. Real quick, going back again to the thaumaturge, Matthew didn't do anything wrong. He said Matthew was correct that exploit vulnerability is not a recall knowledge with esoteric lore, and therefore unmistakable lore would not apply to the check against a creature. However, he can use esoteric lore as a general recall knowledge check, albeit at a minus two for, you know, kind of any other knowledge skill that's built into the class. So, however, when he takes unmistakable lore, which if you recall, that means whenever he critically fails at a knowledge check, he just fails. So he never gets incorrect information. He just doesn't get, you know, so he has unmistakable lore, which means he can't get it wrong. He can only just get nothing. But he also combines that with diverse lore, which is built into the thaumaturge. Diverse lore allows you on a failure to get one piece of correct information and one piece of incorrect information as part of a failure. So Professor Eric is like, if you line all of these things up, this is something that really the GM needs to think about and discuss and come to a decision to on how it's going to play. Because to quote Professor Eric, when you combine dubious knowledge, which is you get one correct and one incorrect on every failure, unmistakable lore, which means every critical failure is a failure, and the minus two penalty from esoteric lore, meaning you're going to fail more often than not, probably, is that you're going to have an exceptional number of triggering dubious knowledge, one correct, one incorrect, which can annoy some GMs, to quote him. So like that really does like combine into something that could get super irritating. So it's just something to think about and discuss with Matthew how you guys want to approach. Like, are you going to come up with a fake correct answer every single time he fails, which, by the way, is going to be more than 50% of the time? And every critical fail is also a regular fail. So he always gets one piece of correct information. It's like, it's a very strange combination of abilities that are frustrating on GMs.
I'll just let him pick another ability.
There you go. There you go.
I mean, it's just like when I think of all the things I like about the games, that's like, that's one of the things that just, it doesn't interest me at all as a game master or a player, is like, here's some vague knowledge.
Yes, or, I hate it too. Like, I just hate it.
It's hard enough for players to know what's going on, period. And right. Now you got to lead them astray. You know what I mean? Whenever I've done it, like, it always has you guys being like, well, a couple episodes ago, Troy said this, and I'm like, I wish I hadn't even said it. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, yeah, it really is. And it's very, I'm 100% with you. The one thing that I'll say on the other side is that for me, I very much so love realistic situations in gameplay. And when those real feeling situations arise in my fantasy game, I like the game a lot more. This is a very real feeling situation this dubious knowledge kind of thing. And the way it's combining is just too much. But the idea that you would confidently think you know something that's completely wrong is very realistic. But from a meta standpoint, I don't like it in gameplay, because like you said, it's hard enough for players, even when you give them the correct information, to come to the right conclusions. Like, to lead them astray is just going to frustrate everybody and extend your game in ways that are not fun. Now, what is there occasions on which incorrect information might lead to really great stuff? Absolutely. But I mean, you're talking about, you know, once every 10 sessions, you know what I mean? You're not talking about like twice a session this happens. It would be brutal. So I'm 100% with you on that. All right. Getting back to Professor Eric, we discussed general feats versus skill feats in terms of, you know, because this is a general feat level that we got to. And should we wait and take something as a skill feat, et cetera? Professor Eric pointed out something that I never realized or put to words, that I sort of noticed, but never all clicked. All skill feats are available as general feats with very few exceptions. So all skill feats are general feats. They almost all have the general trait. However, there are several general feats that are not skill feats. It doesn't go the other way. So there is some reason to, when you have a chance to take a general feat, to take a general and not a skill, because you'll get more opportunities to take skill feats. However, and then he shows a couple examples of some specific builds that might need extra skill feats, and so you would want to use your general for that. But anyway, just a little comment on the way the game is built, that you that all skill feats end up coming up under general with few exceptions. And then the last one was his suggestion that I talked about taking Reach Spell for my fourth level class feat. He was suggesting that I take a Ancestral Paragon, which would allow me as a skill feat to take another Ancestry feat, which would allow me to take Natural Ambition because I'm human, which allows me to take another class feat. So that basically means that I could get another way to get Reach Spell earlier and then free up my fourth level class feat. However, I've already taken Natural Ambition. I talked about it in character creation. I already have it. I'm already using it. What it has built into has not been mentioned much on show. There's reason for that, but hopefully one day it comes out. But yeah, that was a great suggestion. And that's all I had. So thank you so much, Eric, for laying out the analysis of our level up discussion. That was some good insight there. Let's talk a little listener mail.
Okay.
It's time for listen to mail. Gotta get your brain up on it. Time for listen to mail. You gotta cue that bullshit.
All right, we're not going international this time. We are going two questions. Well, not two one comment, one question. All in the Atlantic Division. I call it Atlanta because we got one from Maryland, one from Pennsylvania. Let's get to it. Matt in Nanjamoy, Maryland. Nanjamoy? Never heard of this.
Nanjamoy? I can't be right.
Maryland. Just wanted to say a quick thank you to the whole GCN crew and the nation as well for putting on such a great retreat in Nashville. It was the most fun had in over a decade. Looking forward to future retreats, which I'm assuming will continue for years to come. P.S. It would be awesome if the Gauntlet character sheets were posted somewhere as a GCN Iconics style package. Yeah, we've talked about that. We're working on it. That's something we're definitely considering. So,
do you know how many emails went out yesterday to start planning the next three retreats?
Yeah, it was just too much fun.
Pretty excited.
All right, juicy question here from Stephanie in Norristown, Pennsylvania, where one of my best friends lives. I know Norristown very well. What's up, Stephanie? Hi, guys. I've just finished running a long time campaign at level 20. While I'm satisfied and glad that I saw it through for so long, I can't help but look back at the things I feel I could have done better or things that didn't go as I hoped they would. I'm trying to reframe these things as lessons for the next time around. Are there any important lessons either of you have taken away after the completion of a big game that didn't go exactly as you'd hoped? It's a chunky question.
Completion of a big game and it didn't land, basically?
That, or just, even if it did land at the end, things that you learned during it that you're like, I'll never do X or Y again because I didn't like how that went. It doesn't necessarily mean the campaign had to end poorly, but that during the campaign, something was just not the way you wanted. I mean, one that comes to mind to me, and I've talked about this before, this is a very quick one. My campaign in Council of Thieves ended like I wanted it to. I was happy it ended how it did, but it did end very fast. And we got to the sixth book of the AP, and it was over in like two or three sessions because it was a bit of a sandbox. You could cut right to the end. And the reason that they could – and they pretty much trounced the final encounter, which they were all thrilled with. And I'm whatever. They were having fun. That was the most important thing. But the reason they did it is because I gave them too much treasure along the way. And it really was – it was like death by a thousand cuts. Like I wasn't seeing it coming during the years I was playing it. I would get excited and I would just change an item in the AP that was a really powerful greatsword to like a really powerful dagger because we had like this two-weapon fighting rogue. And I was like – and I did that a few times so that they'd get really excited. Well, over in time, that ended up unbalancing. And I also had five players, I think. That also unbalanced things to the point where – they were so unbeatable. Like I was buffing every encounter and it just made my life harder and it made their life less challenging. And so all in all, I was like, going forward, I will be much more strict with treasure in the future. I will not give so much. That's one big takeaway I remember from one of my long-term campaigns.
I rarely change shit like that because I feel like you're not supposed to use every treasure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, and so
and
the
you
difference
can adapt
is like,
and change, be like, that's fucking cool. You know what? In a couple levels, that's going to be my weapon because I'm going to change my character to fit that. But then you'll want something else. There was something I changed in Giant Slayer because I was just like, thematically, I like this. And it was Fabian Blix's metal.
Oh, yeah. The butterfly pendant.
Yeah. It wasn't. He was like Saren Rey. But I was like, the only like god that's relevant right now in our group is Desna, so let's make it butterfly pendant. But for the most part, I don't like to change treasure, but I also don't give out a lot of treasure.
Yeah. Is there anything that comes to mind for you, Troy, or have you always run every game exactly how you want it, top to bottom?
You know, if there's something that I do where I'm like, I wish I had done that, I have like 1,000 more chances to correct it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I do so many episodes. Nothing is like coming to mind right off the top of my head. I learned so much doing Giant Slayer, 300 plus episodes that I've tried to bring that into Gatewalkers and into my other stuff. But
yeah. I'll tell you another
thing. I can't
think
of a specific example.
I'll tell you another thing, and this is something we've talked about before. You've talked about this a lot in the last year or so, like prepping less.
Yeah.
Another thing that I'll say is during some of the campaigns that I ran, I did a lot of writing dialogue and writing like long monologues of NPCs so that I said everything perfectly the way I wanted it to be said. And then they never met that NPC. or I wedged them in a way that felt forced. So I would definitely say like the less prep thing is not just us being like, hey, just chill out and have fun and not do less work. It'll be more fun. Like there is an element of that to it, but there's also like, it's not just that it's more fun. In a lot of ways, it's that it's a better game. That's the argument. And the reason is that you don't force your players into doing things because you have prepared this cool event that they're supposed to take part in. If you keep things a little bit looser and make that event a little bit more malleable, maybe it can come up in a couple different ways. That way you can place it wherever you want, whenever you want. It's just less work and it gives the players more agency in the overall storytelling. So that is something that I've done in the past that I won't do again because I put in a lot of work and then they would not do the thing that I planned for and I would feel like irritated. And at the table, I could feel myself getting irritated.
Or you'll force it in.
Right. Or I'll be like, really? Really? You're going to go down there when there's this, that, and the other thing? Give them all the reasons why it's stupid to do what they're going to do. Like this, the stairs are right here and you hear somebody crying for help up there. Really? You're not going to go? Like that kind of shit I've done in the past and it just makes me feel sick thinking about doing it. So like, it's just like, you can't do it anymore. You got to be over that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's another big takeaway. But yeah, Troy's made no mistakes. You heard it here first.
I'm mistake free. No, I just don't remember them.
There's so many and you've evolved so much over the years and changed so many things. So, that's going to do it. Thank you so much, Stephanie, for writing and I really appreciate it. And thank you, Matt, for being at the retreat, part of the greatest weekend, of all time. That was just amazing.
It was wonderful.
I really hope it can get, it can happen again and get better and better because it's a real high bar to start with. That's going to do it for today's FOD. Thank you guys so much. We're off for 2 weeks. 2 weeks, no FOD. We will return July 17th. And no Glass Cannon next week either for 4th of July week. Everybody's on vacay, including Francis, CJ, the production team. Everybody's on vacation. So we're not going to be doing it next week, but we'll be back the week after and then a FOD the week after that on July 17th. So thanks, everybody. I hope you have a fantastic 4th of July. And we'll see you after as we head into San Diego Comic-Con and Gen Con. Later, everybody. Take it easy. Bye.
It's time to make your membership official. Become an official member of the NAISH today at jointhenaish.com. That's jointhenaish.com, where you'll get access to exclusive podcasts and live streams you can't find anywhere else. See what everybody's talking about and join the NAISH today at jointhenaish.com.